Hello, and welcome to Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman. I'm Judy. Welcome back to those of you that have been with us before, and for you newbies, welcome. We are so excited to have you here. Selling in a Skirt is all about community, connection, and creating amazing relationships. We empower professional women, and we encourage those wonderful men to be champions for and with women. Now, you know that every time we meet, we have an amazing guest, and today is absolutely no different. And what's wonderful is he's actually in town with me instead of having to do it virtual. So, I'm excited. Let me tell you a little bit about Dave Resege. Okay, so he began his career in the financial services in August of 2007. He spent 10 years working in leadership roles within both Northwestern Mutual and Mass Mutual agencies in Chicago, Fort Lauderdale, and Miami. And in those roles, he specialized in coaching leadership teams and top performing financial advisors. In April of 2011, he began what may be referred to as a side hustle. And in November of 2017, the side hustle went to be full time. His title, which I absolutely love, is Chief Shepherd. And I'm gonna let him fill you in with the rest of his story. So Dave, I'm so excited to have you here.
Yeah.
It's amazing to actually meet you in person.
Yep, thanks so much for having me. Great to be with you.
Thanks. So I want you to let everybody know what you do, why you do it, and what you love most about what you do.
Yeah, really kind of three areas that I specialize. So I do a lot of public speaking, inspirational speaking, mainly to financial services companies. Mm-hmm. And then I do a lot of large group sales training for new financial professionals, and then we do some one-on-one coaching. So that's where I spend 99% of my professional time. And it is still, I've been in this industry since August of 2007 in the financial services world. It still is a thrill to me to see new entrepreneurs and financial professionals really like have those light bulb moments where they start figuring out this business and they can influence really meaningful relationships. So working with brand new financial advisors is a thrill. And then like I was texting back and forth with a former client from a number of years ago. And he was asking me, Dave, what's the top 1%ers doing right now? And I said, I don't know. They're probably somewhere between $500,000 to $1 million of first year commissions. And he said, well, hey, I'm top 1%. I'm on the high end of it. And he was giving me my averages and just seeing like these veteran financial advisors really take their businesses to the next level, all the impact that they make in the world with that still lights me up a lot. So, yeah.
It's an amazing profession. And, you know, the interesting thing is it's not hard. It's not easy.
Yeah.
But it's not hard. Sometimes people make it much harder than it is.
Yep.
But I do know almost for a fact that most of us that have been in the industry, and I've been in it since 1990, didn't start out like that. They didn't, you know, you didn't wake up in the morning when you were little and say, I want to be in financial services. You want to be a pilot. You want to be a teacher. You want to be, you know, a lawyer, a doctor.
Sure.
So what's your backstory?
Yeah.
Because everybody has a backstory.
Yeah. So mine is so, I'm one of those people that didn't belong in this industry at all, right?
Yeah.
I grew up in a small town in upstate New York. Both of my parents were entrepreneurs. My dad ran a ceramic tile company and marble company. I knew I didn't want to take over that business because my knees just couldn't handle it and I didn't have a passion for it. And then my mom ran a daycare business out of the home. So she was there when I got home from school. And so I knew I didn't want to go into their businesses. And in my high school years, I grew up, you know, a Christian, faith-oriented person. And I had a youth pastor from my sophomore year to my senior year in high school. And I was looking into colleges and he said, well, hey, have you ever thought about Moody? And it's a Bible college in downtown Chicago. And I went and visited, and I did my undergrad at this school in Chicago, and I studied to be a pastor, right? And then my senior year of Bible college, a preacher from Dallas came in and spoke, and he pretty much said, if you could see yourself doing anything other than like full-time church ministry, don't go into ministry. And I looked at my two good buddies in chapel, and I said, guys, he's preaching to me. I want to go in the business world. So a friend of mine was doing an internship at a firm in downtown Chicago. It was a Northwestern Mutual office. He got me an interview. I started my career as a financial representative. I was doing insurance business for a little bit. I left the business thinking I was going to be a preacher. I ended up not getting jobs at churches I interviewed at. And all during that transitional time in my life, I was in this long distance relationship with Jennifer. She's now my wife of 14 years. So she was in South Florida. And I knew, like, I've got to move to South Florida. We've got to date in person. I already had the ring. Like, I knew I was going to ask her to marry me. Like, I was all in. So moved down to South Florida. And when I moved down there, I started with Northwestern again, but in a coaching capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So I started working with young advisors, veteran advisors on their language, their activity, their salesmanship, all of it. And I've stayed in it ever since and just love every minute of it. So,
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
How, you know, and you went in and out and in and out in both sides, both sides, in, you know, as a preacher and in financial services.
Yep.
So there's a bigger plan, I'm thinking.
Yeah, what for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. And that's part of, you know, calling myself the chief shepherd, right? Because shepherd in a lot of ways is a faith-oriented term. I really look at just shepherding people's hearts, and it's not a faith thing in the business community for me necessarily, right? Because I work with people of many different faiths and people of no faith, but it's really shepherding somebody to become a better version of themselves. Mm-hmm. It's making sure that I'm paying attention to them at a heart level and at a head level and just serving them however I can, so.
And that is huge and important, and it is really like the theme of what I want to start this with, because I believe that our topic should be about being intentional, both in business and in life.
Yeah.
And when, you know, when you're intentional, you show up. When you're intentional, you support and serve. When you're intentional, you're present. It's all of that. So let's start out with that. What's your definition of intentional? What does it look like for you? It could be business, personal, doesn't matter, but what does it look like for you?
Yeah. I mean, the first thing when I hear the word intentional, I think hashtag intentional gratitude. So any group that I ever invest time with, one of my core values is exercising intentional gratitude.
Mm-hmm.
And it's choosing to take time to do certain things, right?
Right.
So, you know, really making a concerted effort to take time away from the normal rhythm of life, the highs and the lows, to choose to focus on something. It might be gratitude, it might be family, it might be children, it might be, you know, whatever it might be.
Well, I love hashtag intentional gratitude, because to me, gratitude, it speaks volumes.
Mm-hmm.
And it always like irks me and cracks me up at the same time that people only choose to be thankful and grateful in November.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand that, because you need to do that every single day with everything that you do, especially, you know, at the end of the day, look back and say, what did I do today?
Yep.
You know, what can I be grateful for? How did I express gratitude? I believe it is something that we need to learn to practice more, especially in business. So how does that show up in business for you?
Yeah, a couple of ways. So, you know, I'm looking at all these cars driving out on the highway behind us. And a number of years ago, this is probably 9 or 10 years ago now, my coach at the time was a gentleman named John Garrity. And John, I still would view as a coach of mine. I don't formally work with him right now. And I was having one of these coaching calls as a client where I was in just this negative headspace, which is not normally me. I'm a positive, optimistic person. I'm usually very, very high, upbeat. And I was just having one of those days that everything seemed like it was going wrong. And John's first question on every single coaching call that we had is, you know, hey, Dave, what's top of mind that would be impactful for us to talk about? And I said, hey, John, and we only spoke for 30 minutes. I said, John, listen, like, I'm really in a rough spot right now. And I just need to vent, because if I don't vent to you, I'm probably just unnecessarily going to take this out on like a barista at a coffee shop somewhere, and they just don't deserve that.
Yeah.
So I went off for about 28, 29 minutes on all these things in my life that were frustrating. And at the end of the call, he said, Dave, I got a question for you. In your commute from home to the office, and my commute at that time was round trip, like 90 minutes minimum. He said, school buses don't count and taxi cabs don't count. How often do you see yellow cars? And I thought about it and I said, well, not really all that often. And he said, okay, for the next 2 weeks, every single time you see a yellow car, out loud, I want you to say yellow. Will you do it? And I agreed that I would. So the ride home that day, I see a yellow car, I say yellow. And then the ride in the next day, I see two or three. And Judy, it got to a point where I was seeing 8 or 9, 10 yellow cars each direction. I'm seeing 15, 20 yellow cars a day. And what I learned by doing that is, you know, all the normal traditional color cars that are out there, the blacks, the silvers, the grays, the mm-hmm. whites, the navies, right? That's the normal color cars. But when you acknowledge the yellow, they come to the forefront. And he said, okay, Dave, in learning that lesson, what's the transferable truth to our conversation where you were fairly negative and just kind of down and out? And I said, John, in any entrepreneur's life or anyone that's trying to achieve something exceptional for themselves or for their family or for their community, we face a lot of rejection. We face a ton of adversity. I mean,
right.
There's a lot of straining that we have to do. And I said, if I'm not careful, the things in my life that I have that I can be filled with intentional gratitude tend to be the yellow cars. I only see them if I acknowledge them. So I said, John, I just need to start seeing more of the yellow in my life. So practically every single time I see a yellow car that's not
you
a cab or
it.
A bus, we still do it. I do it with the kids. Jennifer and I do it. And it's in that, we ask ourselves in this moment, in this very moment, what's one thing that we're filled with intentional gratitude for. And sometimes it's the basics. I'm grateful for my health. I'm grateful for family. I'm grateful for, you know, our home. I'm grateful for the food on the table. And then you tend to go deeper the more you do it. So
I love that. I love that. You know, it's interesting. My husband is not an entrepreneur whatsoever, just not. And sure. I was going to a conference in Canada, and I said, well, why don't you go with me? And then we can spend a couple of days, blah, blah, blah. So he did. And one of the things that they taught us, or suggested, I shouldn't say taught, suggested, was about gratitude.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, at the end of the day, think of three things that you're grateful for. They don't have to be giant, just something that you're grateful for. Well, we took it to a different level on that. So what we did was every day, at the end of the day, we would say three things that we were grateful for. We'd write them down, and then we'd tell each other.
Yeah.
And it got to be things that you wouldn't necessarily say, wow, that's what you're grateful for. You know, like he would say something like, you made my favorite dinner. I'm so grateful for that. Or I would say, you picked up the dry cleaning so I didn't have to stop. Things like that,
yeah.
These little tiny things that are yellow.
Yeah.
And I think that that's, yeah. You know, that's really important. But the other thing that I see that is in the business world, we tend to lose the gratitude. Mm-hmm. We tend to not think about it. There's a colleague of mine, and what he does is when he will, you know, give his time. And when he spends time with you, it's 30 minutes, 90 minutes, whatever it is, whatever you need, he's there.
Sure.
But during that time, he will say to the person that he's with, the only thing that I ever ask people to do is to write a thank you note because I want them
yes.
to be grateful, right?
Yeah.
And when they don't, he doesn't have time anymore. He just eliminates that.
Yeah.
So I was telling this story. I was talking to a group in a university, and it was a marketing group. And I said, and these were all graduate students. And I was telling the story. And the next few days, there was about 110 people in the audience. The next few days, I got over 100 handwritten
awesome.
Thank you notes because they heard it. And I said, this is what makes you stand out. So when you think about the gratitude and you talk about like new advisors, you know, do you suggest that this is something that they do to show
oh, yeah.
their gratitude?
Yeah, handwritten notes. I really believe the best investment that you can make on a budget is a book of stamps, right? Whatever they are,
yeah.
60 cents, 55
cents
right now.
No, I think they're
right
more now. I think
they're
more.
Maybe a little more. So, yeah, I mean, just thinking back, like it's the end of the month right now in this conversation, and you just as simple as look back at your calendar for the previous month and look at names of people that you invested time with. Now, far better if you do it immediately. But even if you missed your opportunity to show appreciation to someone, just start out the note by saying, hey, I've been reflecting back on the month of February and just thinking about all the different interactions that I've been blessed to have. And I saw your name pop up on my calendar, and I love the time that we invested together. And then I'm so grateful. And you just share with them genuinely
yeah.
in your heart what you appreciate about them and their investment of time with you. Yeah, it's an amazing thing.
Yeah, I used to have the thank you notes in my car,
mm-hmm.
and I would drive to the end of their street, and I would write it, and then I would find the post office that was closest, put it in there so they'd get
so
it like
get
the next day or the day after. And I just think that it made me stand apart, but
yeah.
it was really more about them because they were generous with their time. They didn't have to. And I got more referrals from people that I didn't sell to because I did that, because I always made them feel like they were the only person that was around.
One of my favorite financial advisors is in Miami, and whenever he meets with an individual, he specializes in working with surgeons at hospitals and things.
Mm-hmm.
He'll send them a note, and he'll put it in a FedEx overnight.
Yeah.
And the philosophy is, when was the last time you didn't open a FedEx, right? And people
right.
open it, and they think, how in the world do they value me that much? And regardless of what comes from it, I mean, you're going to receive blessing back simply because you gave joy and love to somebody else. So yeah, love that.
And you don't always give, you know, expecting to receive, because it doesn't always
right.
happen, and you can't get upset about it,
right.
you know, things like that. But, you know, I've seen a lot of testimonials that you've received, because you post them, and they're very, really, you know, about being generous with your time, about, you know, just really nice ones. But you also talk about your personal planning process, and that seems to strike a positive chord with people.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about that and, you know, what it does, you know, for the person in their business life,
yeah.
but it also translates into their personal life.
Yeah, and we can go into a lot of detail on it, but to keep the initial part of it brief, I do something that I refer to as the blended life.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of coaches and performance leaders out there will use some variation of a wheel of life or,
right.
or work-life balance. And I thought about, you know, work-life balance is sort of a myth, right? Because balance by definition is equal weight, equal
yeah.
measurement. So I think of it, instead of work-life balance, more in terms of a blend or a rhythm of life. And I think about 8 different areas of our lives: our career, our financial life, our family, our friendships, our social life and the thing we do for fun, our educational life and the things we're learning, our health and our fitness, our nutrition, and then finally our whatever the 8th one is, I'm forgetting right now, but it'll come back to me, I'm sure. So I take time at the end of every quarter and I do 3 things. The first is quarterly rejoicing. The second is quarterly reflection. And then the third is quarterly reblending. And the first part of it is I just look back, and I generally will go to a place that inspires me. So in South Florida, my spot was the Breakers in Palm Beach. Mm-hmm. I just loved it there. And you know, in now that we moved to Greenville, South Carolina, I think it'll probably be somewhere on the water,
it'll
either in Charleston or Hilton Head, or we'll figure that out. I take time to look back at the last 3 months and celebrate what are the biggest wins that have happened in our life. And it doesn't mean just successes in one specific area. It's what are all the things that we were able to invest our time in that brought us joy. And there's times, and I just pull out my journal and I write every single thing that I'm grateful for. It could be I took the kids to their favorite ice cream shop. It could be, you know, Jennifer and I had a great glass of wine together one night and an amazing conversation for 90 minutes looking at the mountains on the back patio. Whatever it is, but I document and I experience gratitude, because so often, like, we might have high of highs and we might have lowest of lows, but we oftentimes, as successful driven people, are asking ourselves, what more do I need to do, or what more do I need to achieve to become greater at the things that I do? And a lot of times we don't look back and celebrate how far we've come.
Right.
So I take time to rejoice. Then the reflection is, in each of those areas, I ask myself, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10 in this very moment, how do I feel like I'm doing? And a 10 would be I'm thriving, a 1 would be I'm failing. And I fill out a 1-page document, I shade in each of those segments. So now I have a visual of the blend that my life has or lacks. And then the third piece is, the gratitude is my favorite, but this third piece really is impactful as a business plan. I ask myself, in these next 3 months, what are 1 or 2 things, you know, 3 things max,
right,
in each segment that I'm 100% in control of whether or not I do them, that when I do them over these next 3 months will make me feel like I'm making exceptional progress in that area of my life. And so I have a 1-page visual of where I feel like I'm at right now. I've already taken time to celebrate all the things that are bringing me joy. And I have a 1-page business plan of things that are in my control, that when I do them, 3 months from now, I'll look back and I'll feel progress, right? It might not be perfection, but it'll be progress.
We don't need perfection.
Exactly.
I'm a recovering perfectionist. So yeah. I totally get it. But I love that. I love that. And it's really important. You know, when you were talking about work-life balance, there is no such thing. There can't be such a thing, because, you know, when you have a family, God forbid a million times something happens to your kids, you can't go, oh, you know what, I'm in my 50% working.
Right.
But I always say to people, forget the balance. Let's talk about harmony. Because wherever you are, if you're present, you should be in harmony. And that's a different feeling. So people don't, because work-life balance sometimes is negative. And I think harmony just, it sounds like, you know, we can actually get there.
I like that.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you a question, and I wrote it down because it was important to me. Now I can't find it. Well, let's just skip it then. So let's talk about generosity. I believe, you know, one of the last book I wrote, generosity is one of the qualities that a great leader needs to have. And generosity doesn't always mean money. And that's what the first thing that people say was, I can't be generous because I don't have the financial means to do that. So for me, generosity is time. Generosity is being a mentor. Generosity is showing somebody that you really care about them. And in this industry, you don't have it as much as you'd like, because it's not just one-on-one with your manager. A manager might have 10 people, 50 people, 100 people. So how do you show generosity, and how do you suggest that your clients show generosity in business?
Yeah, so the school that I went to has probably the most famous alum from our school is a gentleman named Gary Chapman. Mm-hmm. Gary's the author of the 5 Love Languages. And when I think about the 5 Love Languages, I think about being generous in different areas in addition to just wealth, right? Like,
right,
one love language is words of affirmation. Another is quality time. Another is giving gifts, and there's others. So you don't need to give funds to show that you care about something. You can give deep levels of intentionality and engagement while you're with somebody for 30 seconds by making great eye contact. You can give somebody a handwritten note. you can do an act of service, putting the dishes away for a significant other. For me personally, one of my, what I believe to be one of my deepest levels of giftedness is I really do like being charitable with money. So I pray all the time, God, would you bless us so that we can bless other people? And I even ask that he'd bless us specifically financially. And it's not because I care at all about how much money we give away. I just look around the world and I see so much need in so many areas, and the amount of money that you can give toward those need and the good that can happen because the money and the dollars are given there can really be exponential, right? So, you know, I do encourage advisors to put their money where their mouth is, whatever amount it might be. But back to the handwritten notes, I mean, that's the number one solution that I would tell a young professional. Be generous with your words, lavish praise on other people, look people in the eyes and tell them what you appreciate about them, be specific in that praise, and that's just a great way to bless people.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I want to go back for a second for what you were talking about, business and, you know, giving back financially, because you do that, mm-hmm. and you made a choice to do that. So do you ever see, and I don't know if you do or don't, but do you ever see the outcome of what you've given financially to organizations, to companies, to whomever? Do you get to see the results of that? Or is it something that you're just, yeah, I know you're doing it because it's who you are and what you believe in, but sure. Do you ever get to see the results, and what do they look like for you?
Sometimes I do. I never give because I'm looking to see the result.
I know that.
Sometimes I do. So there's a friend of mine from college who, he and his wife were in Italy for a number of years running a business, and they were in the fight against human trafficking. And part of their business, he's a pen craftsman. He makes these unbelievable fountain pens or ballpoint mm-hmm. pens. So my friend will make these pens, and then they rescue victims from human trafficking, and the victims who now have been rescued take this fine Italian wool and they make these casings for these pens. So all the money that they make from the sale of these pens go to, you know, creating a safe house, or, you know, just
wow.
mentoring men and women that and children that have been in slavery for periods of time. So, you know, being able to read the stories of where those dollars have gone. You know, one of the areas that I'm passionate about in recent years has been the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. I serve on a board in South Florida. I'm starting to get involved in South Carolina and North Carolina with that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, meeting with college students who end up going, many of them do end up going professionally, a lot of them don't, but seeing these student leaders that bring their values to whatever it is that they do, and they can stand firm on whatever their conviction is. It's pretty special for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm glad you get to see some of it, because
yeah.
a lot of times we don't see it.
Yeah.
I think that one of the most special times is when you don't realize you made an impact on someone, and they come up to you out of nowhere, mm-hmm. out of nowhere, and they say, you know, Dave, I heard you speak a few years ago, mm-hmm. and what you said to me changed my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things I always talk about is, you know, for especially for women, 65% of women who have been mentored become mentors. Hmm. And if you have never been mentored, you should be the mentor that you wish you had.
Yeah.
I never had a mentor because I was with all men. And I was with very successful men who taught me certain things, but couldn't get to where I really needed to get to. So I had to create my own playbook, which was fine. But there are lots of women that will come up to me and say, or even men now, they'll come up to me and say, you know, back in 2012, you know, you were at a conference and you said this to me, and I went home and I implemented that, and my whole career changed.
Yeah.
Which is very humbling.
Yeah.
It's very humbling.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So let's talk about women for a second. Women are, you know, that's my topic.
Yeah.
And that's who we are.
Yep.
And I do talk about the lonely leader. And in my case, the lonely leader is female. And in many cases, it could be male. But in my case, it's a female. And what's happening with the lonely leader is, she's not sure who she can talk to. She's not sure who has an agenda, who doesn't have an agenda. Who can she trust? Who can she open up to?
Yeah.
Who's not going to take her ideas and, you know, bring it somewhere else? In our industry, a lot of women don't get to that level where you see a lot of the men. And it's the million-dollar question. We still don't know why. You know, there's more opportunities now than there ever was, but there's still a challenge there. What, in your opinion, and this is really an opinion question, is there room at the top for more women? And if so, do you believe that they should be pushed in there just because they're female? Because I have a strong opinion about that.
Let me start with the second part of it. No, I don't think anybody should be pushed in there because of any reason other than their desire to be at a seat of leadership.
Correct.
I think somebody should be inspired from within. And if they have the desire and the work ethic and the ability to achieve a level of success, they should earn that level of success. So no, I don't think anybody should be pushed into it because of a demographic that they're in. To answer the first part of it, you know, I fortunately in my career, I've been able to see so many women at higher levels of leadership. So I really just believe there is a lot of opportunity that's there. And I've seen so many women that I respect in the business community as entrepreneurs achieve, you know, top 5% success in this business. So it's out there. I think the greatest challenge that I see, well, there's a lot of challenges that I see, but the greatest challenge that I see recently is, and I think I shared this with you recently, there's a saying out there that if you give people the power to validate you, you're also giving people the power to invalidate you.
Right.
And so often we look externally for people's affirmation or for people's praise or for people's permission to do something. And I really think we need to start looking within and ask ourselves, what are the desires that I have in my heart for my life? And you have to have a personal conviction and resolve for what you choose to go after. And I've really been challenged around this with Jennifer, with my wife, right? Because Jennifer is the CEO of our family, right? She's the chief encouragement officer of the Restigy Group. But one of the things, I love so many things about Jennifer, one of the things that I really have come to love so much more is her conviction in the choices that she makes for us and for our family that are different from so many of my female friends that are in the financial services world. Jennifer said, I want to be a wife. I want to be a mother. I want to raise our kids in the house and homeschool. And what I love is she has a personal conviction in her heart that it's okay with me what anybody else thinks about our decision, but this is my resolve of what I believe is right for our family. And I think that's exceptional. I think there are other friends of mine that are women who have a different conviction. Fantastic for you. Have your conviction, let that drive your action and your behavior, and have that personal self-satisfaction that you're doing what's what you feel is right for you and for your future.
And I applaud that and I agree with that. I would say that there are a lot of women who are more concerned about what other people think and do and say. You know, coming through the ranks, I remember people would say to me, well, why are you gonna be an agency manager when you have two kids? Well, a lot of people work with two kids, you know, and I was very careful about how I worked and how I didn't work, and my family always came first. It wasn't like, okay, you know, let's look over here because I'm really gonna, it wasn't that. So I did what I felt was right for my family. But it's still in the back of your mind, you're thinking, well, why does she think that? And why is she doing that? You know, because of the choices that you make. But they are choices.
Yeah.
They are definitely choices. And one of the things that I have seen, especially with this lonely leader, is she doesn't want to raise her hand and say, I want to move up more because of the, you know, the what society thinks of you. And if you don't raise your hand, sometimes people look right over you. Oh, Dave's over there. He'd be good for that. And so I do believe you have to be able to say what you really want to say. I can remember being at a conference table, and it was my first time at a conference table. All men were around it.
Yeah.
The whole thing were men. And around the perimeter of the room were the women. And these were the executive assistants and so on and so forth, who had the power to make all changes, but they didn't think they did. And I remember thinking to myself, I would take my pen and I would start to, you know, write, okay, so he's talking and you're talking and whatever. And I would say by the end of 30 minutes, because you knew the meeting was an hour, it could be 30 minutes. By the end of the 30 minutes, I had to say something, because if I didn't, I would never say anything ever again. And of course, as a female, we would never interrupt anybody either. So you'd have to wait your turn. And there was never, because people would just be talking all over each other. And finally, the man that was sitting at the head said, does anybody else have anything they want to say? And this was my moment. This was my moment. And I said, I have something to say. And it really was very valuable. I knew it was valuable,
sure.
But all of a sudden I started to sweat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said what I had to say, and it was if I sucked the air out of the room. Nobody said a word. The women around the room were thinking like, oh my God, she just committed career suicide. And all of a sudden he said, that was brilliant. Why didn't we think of that? And that it was like everybody, but if I didn't say something, and that's what I mean, you know, as a lonely leader, you know, that women would say to me, you shouldn't be at the table. These are for the leaders of the company. I'm like, I am a leader
yeah.
of the company.
And the same way that comment to you kindled like a fire of affirmation, like, okay, great. My feedback was well received. It's welcome. I'm welcome and I'm valued. There are many that get the opposite.
Absolutely.
And it completely puts the fire out. And my encouragement to that group of women, men, whoever it might be that's ever felt like your flame's been put out a bit, you have the ability inside of you to start a new fire. Keep creating, keep sharing. Don't let one person's remark or negligence of accepting what you have to offer put your fire out. Keep bringing your value to the world. And I know that's so hard.
It is, but it's so true. So with that, with you saying that, do you think that having an external supporter, a coach, or you know, a trainer, what externally, not internally, because you don't know everything that's happening.
Sure.
Do you think that might be an answer to the puzzle of having somebody that they can, like you said before, you needed to vent for those
sure.
few minutes. Do you think that's one of the answers that companies should be doing?
Well, and that's where I'll give a shameless plug for you, right? Because I've referred you to many people that I hold in high regard. Yeah, I think totally they should hire someone like you, or they should hire someone from the
like
outside
you.
That has no bias
right.
to what they care about or what they're pursuing, but they can pay attention to your heart. And they can guide you to make decisions that you feel that you should. Also, just somebody that you can't see the forest for the trees, right? You need somebody that has an outside perspective, that has a 30,000 foot view of everything
yep.
that you're working on, and they can help you see a bit more clearly. And just give you observations, right? They're not there. There's a difference between wearing the coaching hat and wearing the consultant hat,
yeah.
right? The coach is there to help you discover what's already in you. Like, I'm a coach. I'm not generally a consultant. I want to draw out from within people
right.
what I believe is already in them, because I believe that they already know and have every answer and every capability to achieve the problems that they're in, the problems that are in front of them. A consultant is there to be prescriptive. You need somebody out there who can do both, but ultimately will let you make the decision for the facts that you're in right now.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Totally. Okay, we can just be each other's cheerleaders.
Yeah.
So, okay, switch gears. Jennifer.
Yeah.
Tell
yeah.
me about Jennifer. She's.
Yeah.
You said she's the CEO. You said that she's made choices for your family. How do you two decide what's the best? Does she make the decision first and share it with you? Is it a combination? How do you do that? Because a lot of people can't do that.
Yeah, I think every marriage is going to be very different.
Mm-hmm.
We are very collaborative in almost all of our decision making. So when we decided to homeschool, as an example, we were in South Florida. My daughter was the only one in school age at that time. And we had my daughter, Charlie, in a private school in our town that we loved. And this is back in 2019, so before the world shut down because of COVID.
Yeah.
And Jennifer and I, we'd do our pillow talk, right? So we're just hanging out in the evening, and she said, babe, I really think I want to homeschool. And I think initially I probably was resistant, just like thinking that maybe she just didn't want us to spend the money on private school or whatever. And I said, well, tell me about it. Like, what do you really love, and do you really want to do this, and why? And over a series of multiple conversations, drawing out the passion that's inside of her, you know, she said, babe, I really want to instruct our children. I want to teach them. She studied to be a teacher. She said, I want them to be in our home. I want to raise them. Also, I'd love for us as a family to have the freedom to travel with you when you're around the country traveling. We can see the world. We can see so many awesome places. And we just mutually agreed, yeah, okay, that's a fit for us and for our family.
Mm-hmm.
So she started with something that she was passionate about. We spoke on it together. And then eventually we just agreed this is the right decision for our family. It's the same. I mean, even though I'm 100% owner of the Restigy Group, I'm really 50-50. Jennifer and I make decisions in the Restigy Group together, right? Decisions of what's the rhythm of travel that works well for our family? How many days do we want to work in the summer months, right? I mean,
yep.
whatever it might be. So that's how we approach it.
Well, I saw what you did for South Carolina with the kids. Oh my goodness, that was so amazing.
In one day.
How cool is that? Yeah. So she's an amazing person, an amazing mom, an amazing woman. She's amazing all the way around. So I just, good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. And I'm glad you got the ring before you even knew.
Oh yeah, I knew. I knew for sure.
Yeah.
I still know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so 2024, what are you most excited about and what are you most looking forward to?
Yeah. So people ask me all the time, what's next for you or for the Resegi group? And my answer has been pretty consistently the same. My answer is more of the same. I love everything that I'm doing. I just want to impact more people.
Mm-hmm.
So I spend probably 8 hours a week currently on large group training calls with all these different companies where I'm working with advisors that, you know, generally in their first 5 years of the business and newer, many of them are even in their first 6 months or year, and they really need some guidance. The calls are happening, right? So if I'm with one company and we have 12 offices on the call from the eastern region of the United States, and there's 20 firms that could be on the call, I want all 20 because I'm there to add the value and I want to serve and impact more people. I actually, when COVID happened, I asked myself, what can I even do to shrink our rates per person and still grow our personal revenue exponentially? Because I want to be one of the least expensive per person options out there,
mm-hmm.
and still be able to grow a phenomenal company and serve many people. So with our training, getting more people into them, also creating more of our video content so that if I can't spend time one-on-one with somebody, they can still spend time with me one-on-one in the privacy of their Saturday morning routine where they're watching something that I can replicate myself through video. And then I also want, there's something in me, and maybe this is just the version of me that studied to be a preacher. I really would love larger audiences. I love, like today I'll speak and there's gonna be a room of 100 people at the hotel next door. And I don't care if there's 100 people in the room or 5 people in the room or 2 people in the room, I'm gonna bring me and the fullness of me. But because of the impact I wanna create, like I just envision like speaking to thousands, right? And I want those larger industry conferences. I wanna speak at all the large platforms that are out there because I think that there's messages out there that I can bring to the table that really show up in the impact that those advisors make. So there's that. The final thing, when I think not this year, but this year's the foundation of it, I had lunch with Harry Hoopus.
I love Harry.
Yeah, we had lunch. He was so generous in giving me about 90 minutes together in Naples, maybe 6-9 months ago. And I looked him in the eyes, and Harry, you know, with the Hoopus Performance Network and all the video content that they've created over the years and that we're both part of, I said to Harry, I said, Harry, who knows, maybe one day I'll buy you, right? I'll buy your business. And I was joking, but there's a passion in me to create video training content for our industry that is far more impactful and relevant to the current junior in high school,
mm-hmm.
right? I'm thinking about the next generation of advisors that are coming in, and I want to create content that's a little bit more trendy than I've done in the past, and bring a collection of the best of the best. So there's that. That's brewing.
Well, you can just imagine the training that I got.
Yeah.
Zippity doo dah.
Yeah.
We were given a brochure and said, go for it. Because we didn't even have computers then.
Yeah.
So you go out there and if you have a question, just read the brochure to people. So I had to train myself how to be efficient and effective and valuable and all of this great stuff. But had we had, you know, video training that you could do on your own, even just to reinforce, that would have been spectacular.
I also think, I mean, how cool if leaders like us in this industry who know what a prospective client, the information that they want to have from an advisor, what if we create some of that content that can be client-facing for the advisor, so then the prospective client is coming prepared to a meeting, you know, ready to really engage on whether or not they want to hire that advisor. So, and also there's so limited of training right now on fee for a plan planning. Every one-on-one client that I work with, I mean, they are all charging a fee for their advice. And I love that because I tell them, I as a client expect you to ask me to pull out my checkbook or my credit card or Apple Pay and pay you for your intellectual capital. And that, I mean, the industry is not just moving in that direction. The industry's there. Plenty need to catch up to
Absolutely.
Where we are already. So yeah. there's a big opportunity for us to help people in that area.
But that also gives them a sense of worth. Because, and you know, and I'll go back to women again, we don't charge what we're worth, and we don't believe what we're worth. And some people will say, well, how much per hour? I'm like, I don't do per hour. I
right.
don't do that, because, you know, and somebody will, they'll, you know, say, well, you're going to be with us for 6 months. And so it comes out to this per hour. I'm like, no, mm-mm. You know, you're paying for my 30 years in the industry
yes.
is what you're paying for. You're not paying for the hour or the 2 hours or the 10 hours or whatever.
Exactly.
And it's really hard to start to say that. Once you do it the first time, you're like, ooh, that wasn't so hard.
Right.
But, you know, it takes a lot. And I think you're right. If you can just get to the point where, you know, you own your worth, and you're able to share that with somebody else, and you're not saying, hey, look, I'm worth, you know, 50 grand. That's not what it is.
Right.
So the information that you give.
Yeah, it's not how much I'm charging per hour. It's the value that I'm bringing to that hour and the outcome that will come to you if you are coachable and put in the action
right.
that I teach. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot. There's just so much. There's so much. So I know there's going to be people that want to connect with you. So what's the best way to connect with you?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest is just through LinkedIn, right? Connecting
mm-hmm.
with us on LinkedIn, Dave Resege. I manage my own LinkedIn, so it's me commenting on things. It's me liking things.
Yeah.
It's me sending messages. So that's an easy way. I think we'll put the email address
yeah.
in the notes of the
yeah,
show,
absolutely.
So you certainly can reach out via email, and I can get connected with you that way.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
This has been so enlightening. I mean, there's so many things that you said that we could go on for hours and hours and hours, but I know we both have things that we have to get done. So thank you for being with me, and
yeah.
I hope we get to do this again.
Thanks for having me. Great being with you.
Absolutely. And thank you all for joining me at Selling in a Skirt with Judy Hoberman, and we'll see you next time.